You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. Each Monday at 11 a.m., this show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. And my co-host, Dr. Melody Fox, is unable to be with us today, but I look forward to her return next week. In the meantime, this show will continue to address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, and dealing with addictions. We will introduce you to specialized schools, programs, and new innovations that can help you and your family find greater peace and joy together. With over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in these areas of expertise who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, today, we're going to be talking about, well, how much help is too much help? Now, as parents, it's difficult, sometimes excruciating, to watch our teens struggle, fail, or even just fall down. Time and again, well-meaning parents jump in to fix it right now, often causing stress and chaos to their own life and that of the whole families, just to protect their teen from failure or discomfort and try to make them happy no matter what the cost. While our guest understands the intention is pure, she believes it is still not healthy. This is what she calls parenting exaggerated. Our guest today is Lisa Smith. Lisa has a master's degree in practicing counseling and credentials in counseling and administrative services. She has completed over 1,100 intervention home visits while working with youth and families. After teaching for several years and directing one of the largest after-school programs for at-risk youth, Lisa became the intervention counselor at a large urban high school in Southern California. It was here that she found her passion in helping families heal their relationships and overcome their challenges together. Lisa now runs her own business called Save My Family Today as an in-home family coach in Southern California, as well as providing phone consulting for parents across the country. She also teaches and speaks at parenting classes in our local community here. Lisa provides families with support and tools they need to communicate, understand each other, and grow in a healthy and efficient way. Lisa, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I'm really glad to have you here. And I think, as many of our listeners know, one of the things that I do as West Shield is we transport a lot of kids to programs. And this is something that, I mean, as we went through, you know, the probably from about 2000 to 2008, it was happening a lot. But as our economy changed, not a lot of people could afford to send their kids to these programs. So I think that you know, programs like yours, you know, where you're able to help them stay in the home, you know, and figure out how can you make this work in the home, I think it's invaluable. So I really appreciate you doing something that I think fits what we're going through right now.
Thank you very much. I love what I do, and I consider myself very fortunate to be able to help families work through their issues. And my goal is always to give them tools to help them overcome their challenges in the most healthy and efficient way. It's not meant to be a lifelong service, and I've seen some huge successes out of it, so challenging as it is, it's equally rewarding.
And I love the fact that you brought up it's not a lifelong service. I know that that's some of the complaints I will get sometimes from families when they're talking about the fact that they've put their child in therapy or they're doing something, and they said, you know, I don't plan on doing this forever. And so if I hear you right, you're saying that you provide the service, but you also wean them off of you too.
Absolutely. That's well put. I do, because I believe if I'm doing my job well, they're not going to need me forever. And for the most part, that's exactly what we have seen happen. It varies from family to family. Some issues are much more complex than others. Some go much deeper, they're deeper rooted. But for the most part, if we can have real, authentic conversations where everyone in the family gets an equal voice, parents and kids, then usually we can cut to the chase pretty quick, which is just exactly what I want to have happen.
Now, what would be an average time? And I know that that's hard to do, you know, but, you know, and I know that, it, you know, if I get asked that, you know, about an investigation or something like that, you know, I'll say, well, you know, if you throw out the high and you throw out the low, and if I took, you know, 10 other cases, you know, it would mean it would average approximately X. I mean, so What would be the average amount of time that you find that you need to spend with a family?
Like I said, it does vary greatly depending on the issue and how many people are involved. Ultimately, I like to see a relationship between a family and I go for several months, because it's one thing to bring immediate peace to the home. We overcome, you know, immediate tensions, but then it's about teaching tools, and that takes time, and you have to let the process work. I always tell my clients, trust the process. It's not going to happen overnight, but usually within a few months, we can really get to the root of things. And a lot of times parents need one or two follow-up sessions as time goes by, and that's completely understandable.
Sure, yeah, and that would sort of be the weaning off part,
exactly.
To where, you know, okay, we're not gonna cut it off cold turkey. We're gonna start making it a little bit less and a little bit less.
Right, and sometimes it goes from having weekly in-home sessions to bi-weekly, and then I'll just get an occasional phone call from a parent with questions. You know, I know we talked about this. Can you give me some tips? We're having this kind of situation. And I understand that, and I actually applaud parents that follow up with the investment that they're making by having me come into their home. And when things get tough, they go back and revisit what we've talked about, even if that means having to reach out to me again. I think that shows a real commitment to wanting hope and healing for their kids and their relationship with their kids.
Well, now, the main subject that we started talking about, which is the parenting exaggerated, tell us a little bit about what your definition is of parenting exaggerated.
Basically, it's when parenting has gone too far. And what I mean by that is when a parent is willing to do anything and everything for the sake of their child's happiness. And this includes everything from protecting them maybe from teachers or friends, all the way to protecting them from their children's own consequences. So if they have a kid that's continually making a bad choice, and they're so wrapped up in wanting their kids to be happy, they don't want them to experience pain or discomfort, they'll go as far as to protect their child from their child's own consequences. And while that's usually done with good intentions, it really robs the child or teen from learning and learning how to problem solve, learning how to find their own way in life. So, like I said, whether it's with good intentions or not, I think the parents need to be careful to walk that fine line. Show unconditional love and forgiveness. We're always going to be here for you. We'll always support you. And yet, when your kid makes a mistake, let them feel the pain in that so that hopefully they won't do it again.
Right. And I think that also ties into the thing about, you know, your job as a parent, you're not their best friend.
Right.
And your job as a parent sometimes isn't as much fun as we must, you know, we would want it to be. So, yes, I applaud you for that, because I think for a lot of us, you know, we tend to, you know, we want to protect them from everything, you know, and I know how hard it's been, you know, for them to deal with the either mental or physical bumps and bruises that happen in life. And at the same time, you know, we have to look at it that we went through those ourselves and we seem to make it okay out of it.
Exactly, exactly. That's well put. And I think if parents can remember that as painful as it is to see your kids struggle because you love them, it's going to be more painful to see them struggling in the same way as an adult, because they never learned the lessons that they should have learned when they were kids. And if you can keep that perspective, I think there's a lot of hope that you can walk that fine line. And I know it's difficult. I have seen parents really stick to the idea of parenting instead of friending. And they've had to watch their kids suffer a little bit. And I applaud them, because they've had the discipline and the foresight into their child's future to say, look, I know it's hard now, and I know that you're struggling and you're in pain, and I'm going to help you through that, but I'm also going to let you experience that so that later you can look back on this and say, oh, I'm not going to do that again, or I learned to do it better next time.
Mm-hmm. And I'm reading a book right now, and one of the examples that the author gave that I thought really hits home for this is he talks about a young man that's watching from his house across the street with the neighbor boy who's handicapped, and the neighbor boy is trying to ride a bicycle for the first time, and so he has dual training wheels on it, and as the boy's trying to ride the bike, it falls over. Mm-hmm. and the boy across the street looks over and he sees the father up in the window looking down at his son, and he starts, and the boy now feels something. He thinks, what a horrible father, he's not running down there to pick him up. And he said that over a period of days he saw this, and he would see the boy fall, and then finally he said, I can't take it anymore. What a horrible person that father is for not coming down and do it. And he runs across the street himself, and he goes to pick up the boy, and the handicapped boy says, no, I need to do this myself. And he looks up at the father, and the father's shaking a finger going, no, don't help him. And it isn't until about a week later, in which he now sees this boy riding this bike with the training wheels, you know, up and down the street without falling, that he realizes that had the father run down and picked him up every time, that wouldn't have happened.
Absolutely.
So I think that that's a story, again, having just read it, that really fits the situation. Not only do we as parent have to have all the feeling in ourself of that desire to rush out and help them, but there's probably that part of what are other people thinking when they're looking at us going, how come they're not helping them? How come they're not doing this? Well, you know, this is an example of why sometimes you have to take the heat a little bit if you want the desired result at the end.
That's right. And I think if parents can also keep in mind that when you're continually intervening and continually trying to protect your child, what you're ultimately communicating to them is, you can't do it without me. You don't have the skills to cope. You need me to do everything for you. And that's not the message that I think they want to send to their kid, but ultimately that's the message that they're sending. So instead, by saying, wow, I can see that you're having a hard time, let's talk about some solutions. How can we resolve this issue? You're showing your kid that you support them, but that you also believe that they can handle it on their own.
Now, do you think that things have changed? I mean, why do you think that parents seem to feel more compelled to fix everything for their teen? Is it something that's newer? Or if we look back in history, I mean, you know, how long has this really been going on?
I have asked myself that a lot. And my answer is, I think it's been a very slow shift. And we look back even, you know, into the early 1900s, kids were required to do a lot for themselves. And it wasn't until later in the 1900s that this whole invention of adolescence was birthed. And suddenly kids didn't have to go from childhood straight to adulthood. They had this transition phase. And I think slowly that turned into this idea that they're not adults until they're out of the house. But what happens, and what has happened over time, is they're not being prepared. So when that day comes for them to step out your front door for the last time to face the adult world, they're not ready. And that day is inevitable. Mm-hmm. So like I said, over time, I think parents have started to focus on being protectors and service providers rather than preparing their kids for what life is ultimately going to bring them.
So I like that. Focus more on prepare than protect?
Yes, exactly.
I like it. Yeah, I was thinking about it while you were saying that, and I wonder if it's tied somewhat to the Industrial Revolution, because, you know, there was a time prior to that in which they were needed, you know, on the farms. They were needed to work at a very, very early age. And then I think with the Industrial Revolution, you know, you now had situations to where they were going off, either getting involved in manufacturing, and then you have the labor unions going in saying, well, you know, now you can't have them working in here. Now you're sending them back to their homes or their farms, and yet now they're not needed, you know, to do those
Absolutely.
Other things. So now I think, yeah, you have parents now going, well, I'm going to make sure that it's easier on them than it was on me. But if we make it too easy, you know, are we really helping them?
I couldn't agree more. And I think, again, that goes to the good intention of the parents, but it's also short-sighted.
So what are some of the other things that you can do? So now let's go back to, you know, the Save My Family Today, and that we now have a situation to where you have families that are having trouble communicating. You have families that are, or teens that are not coming home or choosing not to come to school. What are some of the things that you can start with the family right away that's going to get them going in the right direction?
Usually the first thing that comes up is consistent consequences. So your child or teenager is being continually disrespectful or defiant, and this unfortunately happens quite often. A lot of times I'll start by asking the parents, okay, so what happens when they don't come home on time? Or what happens when they lose control and start punching holes in the wall or whatever that might look like? What's the consequence? And I'm often met with blank stares. And that's really no fault of the parent. It's just that they don't have the tools. So that's usually where we start. I call it kind consistency. You don't have to be domineering and authoritarian to get your point across. You can stay calm and kind and say, I'm sorry you made that choice. You know what the consequence is. And it's great when I'm working with the family and the parents can say, okay, we do need some consequences. Let's write out what those are going to be. So we start with a real simple list of expectations for the child. And then we say, if you don't meet these expectations, here are the consequences. So they know, and they can choose, the child can choose from that point how they want to handle themselves. So usually we have a few very good days, and they're following the rules. And then, as with any teenager, emotion gets involved. And they say, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. Okay, well, that is your choice. And so let's go back to what the consequences are. And it's hard for parents to make that turn sometimes. But when they can do it and be consistent about it, we see pretty drastic change in a short amount of time.
Now, who do you struggle with most, the parent or the teen?
Alan, putting me on the spot. Usually it's the parent. And, you know, that's not always the case. Yeah. But ultimately, the parent sets the tone in the home. And so the parent needs to be accountable for their behavior. And a lot of times, you know, I'll get the initial phone call. A parent will say, oh, my kid's out of control. They're yelling and screaming and calling me names. And, of course, that's never acceptable. But then I get into the home, and the kid says, yeah, well, my mom calls me names, and my dad yells and screams at me. And so that's when I have to remind the parents, of course, you can't tolerate that kind of behavior from your child. But you also need to be the one to set the tone and be the example.
Right. You can't model it.
That's right. That's right. And again, when they can embrace that, we see pretty drastic change in a short amount of time, which is the goal.
So in fact, going into that about the modeling part of it, now, do you also run into situations to where, the child, let's say in this case, a teenage boy, he's disrespecting mom. And now mom may not necessarily be yelling at him, but you find once you get into the family dynamic that the father is yelling at mom. So it isn't that the boy's giving back to mom what mom is giving him, but it's being modeled somewhere else that this is how you treat this person.
Yes, there is definitely that component. And it may be surprising that as often as I see that, I also often see, over time, usually started from a young age, kids learn that when they put up a little bit of a fight or throw a little bit of a tantrum, the parent backs down. So we're talking mm-hmm. toddler, you know, early childhood through elementary. Well, those small tantrums turn into full force World War III tantrums when they become a teenager. So yes, the parent needs to model appropriate behavior, and this needs to start from early on so that the child knows what the boundaries are.
Right. And so what you're saying is that not only model appropriate behavior, but follow through what you say you're going to do.
If, absolutely.
You know, and I see that a lot too, to where, you know, the parent, you know, will say no, you know, 17 times, you know, well, then the child knows that, well, I can always get through at least 16.
That's right.
I can make it through 16, you know, times before 17. They're so exasperated that they finally follow through. So, yeah, I agree. They've got to follow through. And
it's all about consistency, kind consistency.
That's great. Now, going into a little bit about the, you know, the parents, you know, wanting to protect their kids, you know, how much of that is to where they're wanting to protect them, they're wanting to keep them from dealing with consequences like the child that, you know, that steals or something like that, and then now you have the parent that goes in and fights for them so that they don't have a record and things like that. How much of that is the parent that doesn't want their child to go through that versus it's an embarrassment on them themselves?
I think that's really good insight, and it happens more often than I think parents would like to admit. And I understand that parents see their child's behavior as a reflection on them and their abilities as a parent. But again, if you can put that aside and keep your eyes on the prize, is what I like to say to parents. And the prize is, again, raising responsible adults. So in the moment, you might feel embarrassed or ashamed, or that people are going to judge your parenting skills. But you can't parent and make healthy choices from that place of fear. It's never going to work.
All right. Hey, we are talking with Lisa Smith. If you would like to call in, the number is 323-203-0815. The subject matter, and there's a term out there. I mean, what she uses is parenting exaggerated. But I've also heard the term helicopter parents. And that was one that I had heard. And for me, and working as a, you know, working in the classroom with the teachers as a, you know, a parent helper in the class, and listening to the teachers, you know, I heard a lot from the teachers referring to this helicoptering parent. Lisa, how do you deal with the parents, you know, that feel this need to go back and to dictate to the school that this is what you have to do? You know, where you have, you know, we'll use the name Billy this time, but you know, Billy gets in trouble at school, and the parent somehow finds a way to make it the teacher's fault.
It happens more than people may realize, and I actually love the term helicopter parents. I heard it when I started working in public schools many years ago, and it happens because parents, again, want to protect their kids even from consequences that the child deserves. So it prevents them from learning in the future.
All right. And I think we have a call coming in. Let me answer this. Hi, you're on with Answers for the Family. Go ahead.
Hi, Alan. This is Charlotte. And I'm calling because my daughter and her husband separated last year. And Sarah, my granddaughter, has literally flipped out. I mean, I call it manipulation. She's manipulating the family. She's manipulating everything that's going on. She's not going to school. I mean, when I say she's skipping school, my daughter's calling me hysterical. Her husband, soon to be ex, is not helping. And we're struggling.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I see this a lot. And something to be really careful with for families who are going through a divorce is oftentimes parents feel bad that their kids are going through this. And while there's definitely a place for that and a place to be understanding and compassionate, we can't let that overshadow everything else. So in this case, your granddaughter still needs to be held accountable. And I think it's very insightful that you see it as manipulation, because a lot of times that's exactly what it is. And as soon as the teen realizes that it's working, then it's even harder to switch that pattern. So in this case, I would really recommend, again, coming up with a list of clear expectations from the parents, clear consequences, and not letting the guilt that your daughter may be feeling over the divorce and seeing the pain it's putting her children through, don't let that be the guiding force in how she goes about parenting. Because in the long run, it's ultimately a disservice.
Now, Charlotte, I think...
That's what we're experiencing, yeah.
Okay, and I think if I could add to that also, and I think that if you can talk to both of the parents... make sure that the best thing that they can do is form a united front. If they can have a united front, it's probably going to defuse a lot of that. But as long as they are fighting, it's just going to make it so easy for the child to play one against the other, and it's going to make it very, very difficult for them to set up one set of rules that's going to be able to work in both households.
I think that's really
true.
Let me just add on to that. I heard it said not very long ago, and I thought this was great. When parents are going through a divorce, they need to love their children more than they dislike each other. So, like Alan was saying, they need to form that united front for the benefit of their kids.
Well, my only comment is that my daughter, honestly, with all my heart, I mean this, she is trying to do that. But her husband is... musician, he's running around doing everything he wants to do, and he just doesn't want to bother. And Sarah's just taking advantage of the fact that my daughter works, and, you know, it's hard raising a child. I'm in another state, and it's just a difficult situation.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice. I imagine that it's very draining. And again, I'm sorry to hear that your family's going through this. And, you know, sometimes there's a point when the parent needs to reach out for help, whether it's from other parents or a professional, and, you know, only they can know when that time has come. But ultimately, I think if your daughter stays the course and keeps her daughter's best interest at the forefront, there's still great hope.
Well, do you have online workshops? I mean, do you have anything, you know, I just caught the show by accident, but do you have anything outside of, you know, working in your own region?
Well, I do a lot of phone consulting, so if you visit my website, all my contact information is there, and I take phone calls from parents across the country, and sometimes we'll do weekly phone sessions just to give them some support and some fresh ideas on how to move forward.
All right, and let me put that website out there for you and for the other listeners as well. It's www.savemyfamilytoday.com.
Thanks so much.
All right, Charlotte, thank you very much for calling. All right, you're listening to the Answers for the Family show. Our guest is Lisa Smith, and as you heard, her company is Save My Family Today. We are going to take a break. We will be right back. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. All right, we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. I'm Alan Cardoza. My guest today is Lisa Smith, and we are talking about parenting exaggerated. Again, it's for those that have heard the term helicopter parents and such. But it's not really the only thing we're talking about. What we're really talking about is what are the things that can be done to help bring families together if they've started to grow apart. And for anybody that has teenagers, that's something that happens quite often. And where do you deal with that struggle between you know, loosening the rules, changing it a little bit, letting them grow a little bit, versus, you know, if you hold the reins too hard, is that going to cause them to rebel? On the other hand, if you just let the reins go and give them everything, are you really doing them a service? So, Lisa, what do you think?
I think it's all about balance. And there's a phrase in education called least restrictive environment. And what it is you want kids to thrive without having to micromanage their every thought and movement. So you lay out some basic expectations, and then you let them find their way in how they're going to meet those expectations. So I think when you said, you know, how do you know if you're holding the reins too tightly? That's something that's always changing because your child's growing, which mm-hmm. means hopefully they're always changing, and you have to change with it. And that can be a challenge. So if we tell them, these are the things we expect of you, and I know that you can do it, and if you have troubles, come and let's talk about it, then that really develops the fundamentals of a relationship that is going to bring healthy communication and problem solving as a team, instead of you just dictating constantly, you know, what your child's going to do from one moment to the next.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about family contracts. We were talking before we took the call, you were talking about family contracts. It's something that I certainly believe in. And I mean, share with us some of the things that can be put in there and why it's important. I mean, for instance, you know, the thing that I see sometimes is where you constantly have a child that if they're doing something different than what the family normally allows, and then they're caught at it, when they're confronted with it, you will get this, well, I thought that meant this. So I thought loss of privacy meant that, you know, I would have to leave my door open. I didn't know it would mean I would lose my door, or, you know, so
absolutely.
This, you know, this whole, you know, misperception of one person interprets it one way, one interprets it another. So let's talk about how the family contract helps that situation.
Well, a lot of times parents will come up with a contract without getting any feedback, which equals buy-in from the kids. So the first thing I would say is let's work on this as a group. So parents maybe come up with a general frame and then let the kids say, I really don't think that's fair, or I rather see this or that. And as much as you can, go ahead and compromise, because that gives your child a voice. The other thing is be specific. And I can't say this enough. It happens all the time. Parents will come up with a contract and, like you said, they'll say, if you're disrespectful, then you lose your cell phone. Okay, well, that can be effective, but how long will they lose mm-hmm. their cell phone for? And so the parent takes the cell phone away, and then it's a constant berating from the kids. When am I going to get my cell phone? When am I going to get my cell phone? So the more specific parents can be, the more effective the contract will be. And it also really cuts down on the drama, because you can say, hey, look, let's go back to the contract. You signed it. I signed it. We were clear. So when parents come up with this, they have me look over the contract often, and I appreciate that. And usually that's my first form of feedback. Be more specific.
Okay. And what about contracts now becoming a growing document? You know, you have a child that maybe the first contract is written when they're 12. Well, now they're 16.
Hopefully you've changed it a little bit along the way.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I see some parents parenting their teens like they did when they were elementary school kids. And obviously that doesn't work for a variety of reasons. So it is a fluid document. And as the child gets older and goes into adolescence and their late teen years, they change in personality. They also will push different boundaries. And they're also experiencing different influences from the outside, which then affects their own behavior. So keep a close eye on it. And I highly recommend family meetings. If you can do it every other week, I think that's most effective. If that's not reasonable, then shoot for at least once a month And you sit down as a family, you schedule the time so everyone knows it's coming. They can have their own agenda of what they want to talk about. And you go over things like the contract. You say, oh, look, you're doing great at this, and we want to reward you, so we're going to give you an extra privilege this week. Or you might point out something they're doing well at and then also follow it up with, you know, something we'd like to see you work on is the tone you use with us, or you need to be home on time for your curfew, et cetera. So it is a fluid document, and I think the more parents can embrace that, the better results they're going to see.
All right. Well, we've got an email that has come in, and this one reads, it says, my granddaughter came in to visit us this year for her annual summer vacation, and I'm still freaked out over what happened. This was a girl who was very loving and very attached to us as grandparents, and it was always something that we looked forward to, and we believed that it was something that she looked forward to. Unfortunately, this time, she is completely ignoring us. She's very, very distant. She's very removed. She's now 15 years old, and the only thing she seems to be focusing on is her smartphone or the computer and contact with the friends back home. What can we do as grandparents to still be a part of her life?
Yeah, that's difficult because as grandparents, you may not have the constant access to them that parents do, and you want your time with them to be valuable and pleasant and provide good memories. Yet, it's reasonable to still expect certain behaviors and have expectations while they're with you, whether it be for a week or the entire summer. So it's not a bad idea at the beginning of this visit to lay out very basic expectations. Hey, we're excited to have you here. We've been looking forward to it all year. These are the fun things we have planned. And just keep in mind that these are the rules of the house, and we'll have to enforce those if necessary. So that can really cut the drama right from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, I can certainly see that. And you're right. It's got to be tough on the grandparents because if they're only seeing her every summer,
right.
This happens to be, I guess, the summer of big change.
Absolutely.
and it's hit them. And again, I want to tell all of our listeners, I am speaking with Lisa Smith. Her company is Save My Family Today. And, more so than sometimes with other, other shows that I've done, with her being in studio, it makes it a lot easier to take your call. So again, if you'd like to call in, it's 323-203-0815. And now I want to touch on something that I think is where a lot of parents, at least that I see, are in. And that is, let's say that they've not really set a structure while the child was younger. They're trying now. They see that it's more important now. But what about the parents to where they're trying to do everything now, but they're getting the angry outbursts and tantrums, you know, now coming out of a 15-year-old that, you know, might have been almost cute when they were five. That's not cute anymore. And yet, it seems like for them, they tend to want to back down because it's hard to go backwards. What can they do in that situation? And one of my thoughts was, do they start out by almost apologizing and saying, you know, I'm sorry I didn't do this when I was supposed to, but I just love and care about you so much that we're going to have to make some changes?
Absolutely. In fact, this just came up with a client last week, and the mom was saying, I can see that I've let some bad patterns go on for too long, and I feel like this is my fault. And my response to that is, good for you. You're doing some self-reflecting. You see some mistakes you've made. You're human. That's okay. You're not always going to get it right as a parent. But you're coming from a place of love and wanting to correct things now. So yes, I do absolutely think the parent should own up to it and say, look, I know this is how things have been going in the past, but it's not working. So we're going to have to make some changes, and it's going to be hard on all of us. It's going to be hard for me to implement consequences, and it's also, I know, going to be hard for you to have to experience them. But again, when you look at the ultimate goal, it's going to make it a little bit easier to pull the trigger.
Yeah, and what I see in that also is that, you know, they're starting out from a place where they're not making the child wrong. And I think in any type of relationship, if the first words out of your mouth are you're making them wrong for whatever the activity is, I think it's going to be hard for anybody to find common ground.
Absolutely. And again, it goes back to what we were saying at the beginning of the show, when parents set the tone. So if they can come into a conversation being apologetic and humble and open to feedback, truly open to hearing what their teen has to say, they're going to get much further than if, like you said, they go into it saying, look, you're not doing what we told you to do, so we're going to have to change things, and this is your fault. I guarantee that's not going to get very far, and you're going to have to be calling me sooner than later. So let's try to avoid that.
Well, let me ask one of the questions that I think may be on some of our listeners' minds. When is it appropriate to protect our kids or shield them from consequences?
That's a great question, and I really want to emphasize this. Absolutely, there are times when parents have to intervene in the best interest and on behalf of their child. And one of the primary reasons that this would be is when it comes to physical or true emotional harm. As adults, if we see this, it's our obligation, whether we're a parent or not, to stand up for the kid and be their voice. It's true that teens think that they're unbreakable. And as adults, we know better because we've had our own experiences with thinking that. And we have to watch out for their best interest in that regard. This is not the same as letting your teen experience natural consequences. But when you see that they're really engaging in unsafe and harmful behaviors, then you might have to step in or even have professionals step in on your behalf to make sure that they're kept safe.
Well, and that takes me right into, again, one of the things that we do, which is the adolescent transport. When is there the situation, if you've set up the family contract, excuse me, and let's say that one of the main issues was, dangerous drug use, and there's a continuing violation of that. Is it something that is put in the contract that, after the second time that you violate this drug clause in here, you're going off to a treatment center? I mean, is that
sure.
Something that's put right in there? And
I think it should be, and I think the more upfront and honest you can be with your teen that is an option if they don't change their behavior, then it helps your teen to own their behavior and the consequences even more. So I would not suggest just springing it on them, but give them a chance to correct their choices. And if they can't do that because there's an addiction or influences that they can't get away from, then absolutely, as a parent, you need to provide the support they need to break away from that.
All right. Now, should the parents do a little bit of research in regards to the program, or is that something that you would do for them ahead of time? As you're going over the contract with them, if you see this continuing problem, do you then suggest, okay, let's put this consequence in and then be able to show them that you've already done the research, that based on what's going on, this might be the direction, a particular program or type of program that they go to?
Yes, I do a lot of research ahead of time before I recommend any kind of program. And I get, personal testimonies as to what some other clients have experienced. And when I suggest that to a parent, sometimes it takes a little while for them to get their head around that, because what parent wants to send their child or their teen off to a school that's, out of state or out of the area? But as a group and as a team, we address those fears, we do our research, and again, we let the teen know what's coming. And surprisingly to many parents, this actually brings comfort to their teen, because they are now sensing a structure. They know what their boundaries are, how far they can go, and they hear that someone is paying attention to them and is concerned about them, and that communicates love.
I couldn't agree more. And we've got a comment that's coming in via email. This one reads, "The topic is perfect. I am a social studies teacher and girls basketball coach who has to deal with kids every day whose parents overdo everything. I'm especially tired of those trying to push teachers around who are trying to set structure in the classroom and on the court. I applaud you for your efforts and courage to speak out about this topic. I know the parents do this mostly out of fear, and I will be sharing your site with those I feel will listen."
Well, thank you for that. And I really commend teachers, because they do put up with a lot. A lot of parents say, oh, it's so hard being a parent. Well, imagine spending your entire day with 100 teenagers. That's a completely different thing, a completely different ballgame. But oftentimes I do think that parents are coming from a place of fear because they don't want their kids to make the same mistake that maybe they did. And that produces this overprotective, controlling kind of parenting style. And it doesn't work. And remember, your child grows to be a teen and then an adult, and they're always going to be dealing with people that they either don't like or that don't like them or that challenge them. And instead of stepping in and making the teacher wrong, if it's not abusive behavior from the teacher, the parent instead needs to teach the child how to cope. They need to explain that this is going to happen again in the future. It may look a little bit differently, but these are some options in how you can deal with it. If it persists, then you might have to take it to the next level. But I definitely think equipping your teen from the beginning to deal with it on their own is the best way to go.
Right. Yeah. And I think in dealing with teachers, you know, they all are going to have different personalities. You know, they are human. They're going to have different personalities. But I think that a parent that instantly assumes that it's the teacher's fault and you need to switch the teacher, you're not really teaching your child how to deal with somebody that may have a different view. You know, without saying if the teacher is right or wrong, but if they have a different view of things or they seem a little difficult, hey, that may just be preparing you for that boss you're going to have in 4 years.
That's right. And I think the other side of that is, you know, parents, let's be honest, sometimes your kids aren't perfect in the classroom either. And that's okay. So I know it's shocking. But
I know. I'm shocked. Speak for yourself. Mine are perfect.
Exactly. Exactly. But I think encouraging your teen to be reflective themselves and say, yeah, I can see that I was a little bit out of line. I should apologize. And encouraging them to do that is a huge lesson for them to learn.
Now, well, why don't you give us some tools? Now, we've got about 4 minutes. Just give us a couple of tools that instead of jumping in and taking over, what can parents do to support, love, and help their child when they know that their child is experiencing a real challenge?
I think first and foremost, your child needs to know that you are in their corner. You are going to support them. This doesn't mean that you're always going to jump in and intervene, but ultimately they can come to you to find a safe place and to be comforted and nurtured. And I think if you have that, you can overcome pretty much any obstacle. So provide that, communicate that regularly to your teen, and then also be very clear on what you expect from them. And if you think you've been clear and yet you feel like it's still not working, then revisit it. If it's to a point where they're not willing to listen, then you may need to call in for some professional backup is what I call it. And mm-hmm. That's okay. That doesn't mean that you're not a good parent. It just means that you recognize that your family needs extra help. So again, be their cheerleader, always be their advocate, show that you believe in them. And that's why you're letting them handle their problems on their own and help them problem solve, have those conversations. Okay, how can we handle this? What would be a better way to approach it in the future? And then ultimately remember that you are wanting to raise responsible, compassionate, competent kids that become adults. And to do that, you really do have to walk the fine line of being loving unconditionally and also holding your child accountable.
Right. Yeah, which again makes me think about in regards to my father and the belief that, you know, they raised us to be grounded and give us wings.
Absolutely.
So, you know, with my father and my mother, you know, that was the goal that they had. And I think some of us as parents have a little trouble with the wings part.
You think?
Yeah. Now, we're almost out of time. We've got about 2 minutes. But one of the things that anybody that's listened to this show knows that I like is I love success stories. So if you could give us a story of a family where you can outline a little bit about what the problem is and maybe something that a lot of other people could relate to and really how you achieve that success.
I think a common problem that I see and one that I have experienced with a particular client who I adore is drug use and alcoholism. And unfortunately, it's really a growing epidemic. So I had a family call several years ago and we're still in touch. So I've been able to see them evolve as a family. And at first, their son was struggling just with kind of experimenting, dabbling with marijuana, occasional alcohol use. And this was very concerning for them, as it should be. So I came in And again, we started with specific expectations. And being a teenage boy, he wanted to push the limit. So he wasn't meeting those expectations. And the parents really struggled with implementing the consequences that we had come up with. And ultimately, over the course of several months, and then it turned into a year of off and on visits with me, the parents realized that the more consistent they were, the more comfortable and confident their son became, because he knew what to expect. And from this, he was able to overcome some addictions, and he's very respectful. And not that long ago, I actually got an email from them saying that he wrote them a letter, he's in his late teens now, thanking them for the intervention. And wow. I think that's amazing. It's really a testimony to parents who are willing to put their personal pride and fears and need for control aside and say, we are committed to being the best parents that we can be for your benefit. And it worked. And it's amazing to see, and I've seen it more than once, and I love it. So to the parents listening, there is hope. And I think as long as you know what your ultimate goal is and you really pursue it with passion and love and balance, it's going to be okay.
Well, that's really beautiful. Lisa, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it. And for everybody out there, again, if you want to get more information on Lisa and her company, it is SaveMyFamilyToday.com. If you're out there driving, you can't write that down, obviously. Go to our blog, Answers, the numeral for thefamilyblog.com, and we have all of Lisa's information on there. Again, Lisa, thank you so much for coming in, and thank you so much for working with families the way you do.
Thank you, Alan. It's been a pleasure.
All right. And for everybody else, we hope you'll be listening again next week. Take care.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.